Okay, everyone, we are beginning here. We have finished Esoteric Astrology Adventure 92. Today is the 30th of April, 2013. EAA beginning, 93, Part A, 30th April, 2013. Right. So we continue here on page 307. Before individual man can achieve initiation, he must be fully self-conscious, mystically oriented, and occultly developed. The full self-consciousness is related to the sun as the first ruler of Leo. The mystical orientation is related to Neptune as the veiled ruler, the veiled esoteric ruler, and occult development to Uranus, the veiled hierarchical ruler. There is a very strong occult mentality involved in this occult development, and a great sensitivity involved in mystical orientation. This is provided by Neptune. One who is oriented mystically looks beyond the obvious presentation of the senses towards subtle vibrations and forms and levels and subplanes and so forth, which he begins to sense and touch. But occult development is something else. Not only does he sense and touch these subtleties, but he learns about them more scientifically so that the laws which are operative on these subtle levels are made clear to him, and he can become a manipulator and director of these subtle energies. That is occult development, occult registration, and occult power with respect to these subtle realms. He must be aware of himself as he essentially is, a soul involved in form, which is itself developed and unfolded through soul activity. We realize that form does respond to consciousness, and that the refinements and modifications of the form are really derivative of the state of consciousness. This is not presently understood. Usually consciousness is considered to be a kind of epiphenomenon of an aspect of matter, as if consciousness derives from matter. This has everything reversed. How are we essentially? Well, I think we are more essentially the soul than we are the personality, but we are even more essentially the monad than we are the soul. But nevertheless, the word essentially is being used here in relation to soul consciousness. In a way, the term soul and consciousness are equivalent. So there is a consciousness upon the higher mental plane, which we normally call soul consciousness. There is consciousness upon the realms of the spiritual triad, a higher type of consciousness, and this we call triadal awareness. And there is also soul, in a way, on the level of the monad, and we call this monadic awareness. That which we usually call soul, however, is the type of consciousness which is found on the higher levels of the mental plane. So anyway, form is unfolded through the growth of consciousness. He must be a developed mystic, capable of pure vision. There is a great purification that has to do with the planet Neptune. And not just an orienting mystic, a mystic at the beginning of his development, but someone who can truly touch these subtleties and be capable of the kind of vision which lifts him above even the 21 lower subplanes into the realms of the spiritual triad. Neptune, under the right circumstances, will do this. Okay, so capable of pure vision and motivated by spiritual intent, the desire to rise in consciousness toward higher contacts. Neptune always gives this. And able to perceive the uses of inherent sensitivity. There is so much which would escape us if we are incapable of the kind of subtle perception which Neptune can offer. So we must be aware of that which usually escapes our notice. And Neptune confers this. You must also be the trained occultist, and notice the seventh ray implication of the word trained, the seventh ray coming through Uranus, and Uranus being, above all, the occult planet. The trained occultist, who systematically understands that which is contacted via Neptunian sensitivity. Mentally polarized, which occurs between the second and the third initiation, so this stage at which Uranus takes over in the life of the Leo person, is beyond that point of decision between the second and third degree. Matter of fact, it's more focused at the third degree, and profoundly, that is, deeply aware of the realities, forces, and energies of existence. It's not enough to touch subtle things and know they are there. One must know the nature of what is there. The realities, forces, and energies, and be able to name them, manipulate them, direct them, use them in line with the plan and purpose. So profoundly aware of the realities, forces, and energies of existence, and therefore free of the ordinary glamours, those that pertain to the astral plane, because one's consciousness is focused much higher than that now, the ordinary glamours and illusions, because we have transcended the sense of fragmentation on which ordinary illusion is based, free from the ordinary glamours and illusions which color the reactions and life of the average man. So obviously, once Neptune has come into full play in the life of the Leo subject, interesting the word subject, because the Leo individual must become the subject of the inner ruler. He is no longer the ruler himself, at least from the personality angle. He is subject to the higher centers of energy within his own nature. Therefore, when you use a word like Leo subject, it shows the need for humility in the Leo individual. So he is free of these lower states of egoism we call glamour and lower illusion. There are higher illusions from which he is not yet free, and they continue, we are told, even up to the ninth initiation, at which time there is freedom from all illusion. There's also freedom from the cosmic physical plane. So one presumes, in a sense, that illusion in this high sense is found upon the cosmic physical plane. He is then governed by the physical sun. That's in the sense of his self-consciousness, motivated by the energies pouring from the heart of the sun, moved by these loving energies, these energies of fusion and unification, via Neptune, and bringing about at one-ment through the forces which reach him via Uranus. This is a conscious occult at one-ment. Conscious occult at one-ment. It's not the sense of the mystical wholeness, which is important too, but it is the use of energies to realize. Uranus has so much to do with realization, to realize the isolated unity in which one as a triad in spirit, habitually lives. Okay, going on then. So in various ways, DK is telling us how the planets, the sun, not really a planet, of course, but considered for astrological purposes a planet, how the sun, Neptune, and Uranus cooperate in making the man the true occultist, deeply involved in identification. Remember, identification requires esoteric experience. It also requires realization. Realization is related to the atmic plane. Realization is related in the sense to Uranus with its sudden impression of what reality really is. Beyond these two distant planets lies another planet as yet undiscovered. Though speculation is rife about it, owing to certain unexplained movements of the planet Neptune. Well, this cannot be Pluto, because by the time this book was written, Pluto had been discovered. It is, in fact, a planet far more distant, at least that is the current thinking about it, far more distant than Pluto. And in his book, The Undiscovered Planets, Charles Jayne dealt with the possibility of this planet, which was called Isis. Right now, it's given a kind of a spherical orbit, not an elliptical orbit. And its period is approximately 360 years. But let us see, you know, as time unfolds, it's an important planet. It is definitely a part of our solar system, and it would be most interesting if its name were correct, Isis, relating so much to Sirius as Sirius does to Leo. There is that connection of Sirius, Leo, and Jupiter. So it is through this planet that the forces, as they are related to Leo and Aquarius, are focused in one potent stream of force, and these pour into our planetary life during the month of August. Interesting, again, related to Sirius. The Sirian festival being a time of august recognition. When we look up the word August, we see that there are hints given about that festival, that important festival, at which time the entire hierarchy with all of its new members is recognized as a single body by Sanat Kumara. It seems to be a Sirian festival. August, Sirius, Leo, and this planet, which may be called Isis, and we know that Isis is yet another name for Sirius, all these are related. So it is through this planet that the forces, as they are related to Leo and Aquarius, are focused in one potent stream of force. These pour into our planetary life during the month of August. We have to avail ourselves of such opportunities. It's not as if all things are available to the same extent at all times. They are always available, in a sense, because they are always present. But there are times of intensification and activation which make certain potencies more available at one time than another. And part of the art of living is timing our interaction with these descending energies so that full advantage may be taken of them. You have, therefore, in this connection, he tells us, Leo and Aquarius, the physical sun, heart of the sun, and central spiritual sun, Notice the central spiritual sun here will be, I think, the monadic nature of our solar logos. Heart of the sun, his soul nature on the higher cosmic mental plane. The undiscovered planet. Well, let us go with what some have said. They've called this Isis. This is the name given to it. And various characteristics have been collected concerning those who are influenced by Isis, although it's hard to see how a truly accurate ephemeris could be created for this planet, an ephemeris which is based upon a true orbit and not simply a speculative orbit. But interesting about the planet, speculation tells us that its number of years revolving around the sun is about 360. So this relates it closely to the Earth, which revolves around the sun in archetypally 360 days. Days and years are here contrasted. So it's a planet quite far out there. I'm trying to think of how many... the farthest planet that speculation now gives us, the combination of speculation and psychism and astronomy and mathematics altogether, is about 1,600 years, or a bit less, and that's the planet Lion. There are other bodies which apparently revolve around our central sun, our solar orb, and even at angles which are not in the ecliptic, but perhaps at right angles to the ecliptic. I'm recalling that Charles Jane mentioned a certain planet called Q. In any case, we know that Sirius does distribute energies through Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn. Sirius is another name for Isis, so it would be fitting for the Sirian connection to be involved here with this undiscovered planet. As the three synthesizing planets receive the energies of Sirius, so why then should the planet, why should there not be a similar reception from the planet, which stands in a sense in a superior position to our three synthesizing planets? Then comes the human hierarchy. Notice we're not including Shambhala here. And then the animal kingdom, which in its form is so closely related to the human hierarchy. We can understand that there are tremendous interrelationships of which we know absolutely nothing, and we are dependent for the master minds and master consciousnesses such as those of Master DK to give us some intimation of their existence. But one day, if we should become members of the astrological department of hierarchy, which I think includes very, very high initiates beyond the level of adept, we will be privy to this type of astonishing information related to the interplay of systemic and cosmic energies, and the relationship to the planetary energies, of course. Charts of the cosmic lines of directed force. Notice he does call these cosmic because they involve extra systemic sources. Leo and Aquarius are definitely part of the cosmic setup. So Leo and Aquarius are involved in this descent and are therefore participating in cosmic lines of directed forces, such as the above, can be given for all the energies of the constellations and planetary forces. So he's just hinted here. He has given us 1/12 of what it is possible to give. We could begin with, or 1/6, depending. We are dealing with Leo, particularly, and it's hard to know if we were dealing with Aquarius, whether this descent of energies would be somewhat different. But we do begin with Leo and Aquarius, and so there are at least 6 pairs. And we could begin with Aries and Libra and trace our way down, and probably Shambhala would be involved because the Great Bear would be involved and so forth. Probably above this line of descent, we should probably include Sirius or the little bear. Whoop, lunar body. Little bear. Okay. But he says, this is the only one that I choose at this time to indicate because it is of major importance to humanity. It does involve humanity's transition into the fifth kingdom. Leo is the fifth sign. Aquarius is the sign or constellation during which a major part of this transition into the fifth kingdom will be made, and we have also a very long age of Aquarius, some 25,000 years, which is in process of beginning, though we don't know exactly when, but we are told that it is imminent. So this is the only one that he chooses at this time to indicate because it is of major importance to humanity. The others might prove misleading, given man's present point of intelligent understanding and influence. Well, man doesn't have too much intelligent understanding, I suspect. And his influence is increasingly great upon the planet, so it's not only a question of information and the imparting of information. DK could do that, but he has to know the condition of our vehicles and of our consciousness, lest that which is imparted be misunderstood. It's quite likely, he's telling us, that if he gave us lines of descent involving other constellational pairs, we might indeed misunderstand and be misled. So the responsibility of the teacher is very great because he has to anticipate the possible lines of thought of his receiving students. And given their limitations, well understood, he may decide that even though the truth is the truth and could be imparted, it would not be useful to those who would eagerly receive it. He says, I would here call to your attention that through these directing planets, that is the undiscovered and Neptune and Uranus, and later Saturn would have to be included, the following rays are controlling factors in the chart of the Leo subject. So basically he's saying that according to the rulers of a sign, their rays will be controlling factors in the life of those born in or under a sign. So the second ray, the sixth ray, the seventh ray, they will all be important in the Leo subject. And you know, if you're looking at Aries, the person with Aries rising or Aries sun, the sixth ray of Mars, the fourth ray of Uranus, fourth ray of Mercury, and the seventh ray of Uranus would also be important controlling factors. And so what does it mean, of course, controlling factors in the chart? It means that the Leo subject will have access to these energies simply because he is a Leo subject, and regardless of what other rays might be in his ray makeup. So what does he say, then, are the controlling factors in the chart of the Leo subject? Well, the sun, the second ray of love, wisdom, this will be important. And probably, you know, maybe in a way more important than the rays which come through the constellational levels per se. Interestingly, he mentions Uranus next. Uranus is in the order of the planets next and occurs before Neptune. But from the perspective of the higher synthesizing planets, it seems that Uranus is elevated above Neptune. So the order in which he presents these planets is sometimes indicative of hints that he is attempting to give. Uranus, seventh ray organization or directed manifestation. Notice that it's not just happenstantial manifestation. It is will directed, purposefully directed according to plan, manifestation, purposefully directed according to plan under the first ray, seventh ray influence of Uranus, and Neptune's sixth ray, idealistic one-pointedness and devotion to an objective. Neptune shares this ray rulership with Mars, and presumably the ideals toward which the Neptunian subject aspires are less material than those towards which the Martian subject aspires. So he's basically saying rays 2, 6, 7 are important in the life of the Leo subject. Okay. In the perfected Leo individual, perfected, what is perfected? Is it fourth degree? Is it fifth degree? The loving, conscious, self-conscious soul, second ray, carries its power of expression straight through from its own plane to the plane of exterior manifestation. And this would be kind of a seventh ray alignment. Straight through into manifestation, but preserves at the same time its interior control. These are important descriptors related to these particular planets. And from that point of achievement, proceeds to make its ideal objective, Neptune, a fact in consciousness. One wonders whether it will become a fact in manifestation. A fact in consciousness through sensitivity to higher vibration, that's Neptune again, and directed intelligent service of the plan. It is one of those great summations that DK periodically gives as he ties together all that he has said in previous pages. So let's read that again and see if there's anything further that will impress itself upon us. In the perfected Leo, the loving, self-conscious soul, the second ray, in the state of unity with other souls and beginning of perceived oneness, harmonious, unified relationship, the loving, self-conscious soul, second ray, carries its power of expression. And there we have the Leo factor, don't we? Leo in the fifth house, related to self-expression. To self-expression. So the soul is functioning, fully expressive, right down on the exterior plane of manifestation. The person becomes the soul, truly the soul in expression. The soul truly in incarnation expressing the majority of the powers of the soul, those that can be expressed on the outer level. Straight through from its own plane to the plane of exterior manifestation, but preserves at the same time its interior control, In other words, it is all directed from the plane of soul, and since we're dealing with Uranus, even higher planes than that, because the Uranus has much to do with the triadal levels and the cosmic ethers on which those triadal levels are found. In a way, the four cosmic ethers are ruled by Uranus and the three lower cosmic subplanes by Saturn. Preserves at the same time its interior control, and from that point of achievement, controlling from above and successfully and fully expressive below, proceeds to bring through to make its ideal objective, which probably is oriented towards still higher worlds, and we can put that in. So, let's see, right here. Yeah. Oriented towards still higher worlds. The control mechanism is set up, and now the great ideal, whether it is Buddhic or monadic or having something to do with higher psychic states, can be brought through as a fact in consciousness affecting what will occur within the field of exterior manifestation. So it's not only the self-conscious soul that is expressing, but still higher types of expression accessed through Neptune, higher types of expression related to worlds that are higher than the world of the soul. So these interior states become facts in consciousness and can be wielded in expression through the power of Uranus. So Neptune, in a sense, delivers very high results and realizations to Uranus, which through its interior control and its power of manifestation brings them right onto the outer plane along with the expressive power of the loving self-conscious soul. Through sensitivity to the higher vibration and directed intelligent service to the plan. Well, sensitivity to the higher vibration, this seems to be related to Neptune, and directed on the first ray and seventh ray directors, directed intelligent service, Uranus is very intelligent as well, directed intelligent service of the plan. And that relates mostly to Uranus, the aspects of will and intelligence, will united. So we've pondered a little bit on this summation as we've been able to do. Now going on, when Uranus controls at the stage of the third initiation and beyond, the Leo person, notice he's called a person even though he is an initiate at this point, even a monad can be called a person or people. He talks about fifth ray monads, i.e. those people, he says, whose monad is upon the fifth ray. So we cannot localize these terms too rigidly. They have a certain fluidity and they can be used to indicate different levels of human development, even though we think a term like person should be used for the personality. When Uranus controls, the Leo person is significantly the true observer, detached from the material side of life, but utilizing it as he pleases. There is a sense of cleavage in Uranus. It stands apart, identified as spirit. We could say that from one perspective, Uranus is monad, Neptune is soul, and Saturn is personality, if we want to assign the three synthesizing planets in that way. So the true observer has a strong fifth ray component, the ability to be objective and to see without biases. Uranus is associated with electricity and with the power, the three forms of energy, electric, which mount to the high place, has a strong fifth ray, perhaps a fifth ray mind. Some have thought that the planet has a fifth ray personality, but it seems from other things that DK has said that the third ray personality is something to be considered. Detached from the material side of life, even as the ethers are detached from the dense side of life, even as the cosmic ethers ruled by Uranus are detached from those cosmic subplanes which are ruled by Saturn and have to do with the dense physical body of the planetary and solar logos. So the Leo person, when Uranus rules, is significantly the true observer. He has, we remember, the fifth ray and the first ray, which allows him to be aloof and therefore temporarily uninfluenced by what he may see. At least he's not so enmeshed in it that he cannot be objective. But he utilizes it as he pleases, and that is the manipulative side of Uranus, its third ray, its seventh ray soul. The third and the seventh rays are two strongly manipulative planets. Actually, Uranus is also a first ray monad. This is its esoteric ray, the term esoteric, when applied to planets, sometimes indicating the monadic ray. But utilizing it, the material side of life, as he pleases. Interestingly, Uranus rules the lowest of the creative and most hierarchies, the most material. So Uranus rules the lowest of the creative hierarchies, the most material, which has to be rightly manipulated during this age of Aquarius so that we can produce a true age of spiritual materialism or spiritual materiality. The transmutation of the usual condition of the material spheres so that they can come into etheric alignment with plans and purposes of the greater deities. His spiritual consciousness is, notice again, spiritual consciousness, that takes it up at least to the realm of the triad. His spiritual consciousness is capable of great expression through matter, because he has reconditioned matter, has he not? He can manipulate matter. He can electrify it in the proper archetypal arrangement, and therefore the spiritual consciousness is not blocked. It can truly express. Right. And he can be, as has often been pointed out by astrologers, both an electric, dynamic leader, a pioneer in new fields of endeavor, and also a magnetic center of a group, whether the group is small as in the home or vast as in a nation. We really see the role of Uranus contributing to the leadership of Leo. Role of Uranus contributing to the leadership of the Leo individual. So dynamic, moving with power and purpose, pioneering. Uranus rules Aries. Uranus is also the planet of the new, in new fields of endeavor. Always things can be improved, and Uranus sees the new way, which is closer to the archetype, and magnetism, a magnetic center of the group. And we remember, interestingly enough, that magnetism is more a quality of the first ray than it is of the second ray, and Uranus being the preeminently monadic first ray planet. So we have expression, we have leadership under Uranus, we have pioneering, and we have magnetism. Something to be remembered about the arresting, commanding, directing energies of Uranus, which can make all things new, bringing them in line with the intended archetype, archetypes, which are the expression of the divine purpose. He is then polarized above the diaphragm at that point of his evolution for the lower, more material aspects of life, have really no great appeal to him. He sees that they must be used, of course, because we are here to redeem that congestion of energies we normally call matter. But there's no appeal. It's simply as an object of service that they are seen. You know, he's giving us so much here on the nature of Uranus, the true nature of it. He is then profoundly conscious of his own identity, his own truly spiritual, divine, essential, central identity. And this makes him dwell definitely in a state of self-awareness, with its consequently abstracting powers. It is a really, what can we call it? Sort of a divine spirit awareness, standing apart from all divisions and expressions of spirit. So the self-awareness is minimally the self-awareness of the soul on its own plane, as the third degree initiate under the sun veiling Uranus would have, and even higher as an impersonal triadal being, and finally as the spirit, the directing spirit itself on its mission of transmutation, transformation, transfiguration, translation. You can relate all of these trans, which means beyond and through, to Uranus. And in that respect, it seems reasonable to consider it a planet closely related to the monad. It says here he is instantly aware, once he is spiritually awakened, and that word instantly is such a Uranian word, isn't it? You know, Uranian, related to spontaneity and suddenness. Suddenness. So he does not need to reason his way. He does not need to piece things together. He simply sees simultaneously many relationships. Mercury begins to give us this, but Uranus is the higher octave of Mercury, and so the suddenness of perception is uniquely Uranian. Suddenness of perception or of realization. He is instantly aware, once he is spiritually awakened, of his motivating impulses, that which is truly driving him from the spirit level. And this leads him to an imposed self-discipline. Probably he is aware as well, through his ability to be clear-sighted and objective, of the kinds of motives arising from lower levels, with which he's not terribly interested, but which he can see clearly. Also, those arising from lower levels. So instantly aware of these things and determined to bring through the purpose and plan, thus disciplining himself in order to bring these through. An imposed self-discipline, the thing the Leo subject sorely needs, and which must always be self-imposed and self-applied, for he brooks no disciplinary measures which others may seek to impose. This refusal to brook or to accept disciplinary measures can be related to the fact that Saturn, planet of discipline, is in detriment in Leo. And in some ways, this is true of the Aries individual as well, the two signs in which the symbol of selfhood, the sun, either rules or is exalted, do not brook disciplinary measures imposed from outside. Leo is a sign of centrality, And so from the very center of selfhood, these disciplines must be imposed, and at the time when the Leo subject sees fit to impose them. Here DK seems to be speaking of from his own experience over many lives and having witnessed the forms of behavior of various Leo subjects. Discipline imposed by people upon the Leo person lead invariably to revolt and rebellion, and the expression of that which the discipline is intended to eradicate. Kind of a contrary nature here. It would seem almost willfully doing the very opposite that had been hoped by the imposition of external discipline. I suppose it would be difficult for the Leo subject to find himself in the army under Virgo, let's say, where all must be immediately obeyed without thought almost and without hesitation. Discipline imposed by himself leads to the perfection of which he is notably capable. He will leave no stone unturned. Heights of noted service, we are told. The word perfect is used often here with respect to Leo. It is frequently used in relation to Leo. Discipline imposed by himself leads to the perfection of which he is notably capable. But it's as if his selfhood is non-negotiable, and no other self has the right to impose itself upon the Leo individual's sense of authenticity. He will not allow his self to be compromised. Of course, on the lower levels of expression, this can lead to rebellion, to revolt, and to non-cooperation, and to separativeness, and to all that disrupts the group consciousness. So discipline imposed by himself leads to the perfection of which he is notably capable. It is this innate ability to control, such a first ray and seventh ray ability, the innate ability to control, which frequently gives the Leo subject an apparently negative attitude to life. This is an interesting psychological observation. What is meant by a negative attitude towards life? One in which he fails to take a positive and proactive stance, because he's certainly capable of that. He inevitably believes that his destiny is determined. And the glamour of destiny, I suppose, a first-ray glamour and something to which the Leo subject is often prone. He inevitably believes that his destiny is determined and that all he has to do is simply to be. Goodness. So many of us struggle to learn to be, to continue to be what we are, and thereby have an effect which is even more powerful than our usual activities. He inevitably believes that his destiny is determined because he plays an important role in the design of things. He is an authentic self, which is part of the great unification of authentic selves in the one self. I suppose that would be the philosophical resume of what he feels, often in a lesser way. He inevitably believes that his destiny is determined and that all he has to do is simply to be. He refuses often then to change or to take action. So, that's how I am. I am as I am. I am as I am. I'm remembering a film about Churchill where he was, obviously misbehaving in terms of right human relations with his butler, and his wife chastised him for it. And he said, well, he knows how I am, there's no need to change because how one is rather divine and is meant to be. So to modify, to take action upon oneself, and even perhaps to take action in the outer world, to lift the finger, to lift the hand, being may not be enough. Such modification, the Leo subject may be reticent to make. So he often refuses then to change, to take action, and when this is carried too far, it leads to an unexpectedly futile life. He had been expecting great results because of his, let's call it, divine nature, the divine status, the divine right of kings. And in fact, he fails to make an impact because action must be taken. Action is on the third aspect of divinity and being more related to the first. The, quote, lion must emerge from its lair. And this injunction is badly needed by Leo aspirants. Well, I think he localizes the stage at which there is a problem. He's not talking here of Leo initiates, but those who must learn to do more than be, to be positive towards life, and to move themselves from the center, to move themselves from the lair, and thus become effective in the world. It will, when followed, lead the self-centered consciousness, always focusing upon itself and its own sensitivity and its own distinctness, its own uniqueness in relation to the environment, which it seeks to preserve at all costs, lead the self-centered Leo consciousness into the decentralized, selfless Aquarian consciousness. And this, I think, we call, for the higher Leo, we call this the relinquished point. Selfless, of course, there can be selflessness in Leo as well. Probably the combination of the two signs, Leo and Aquarius, produces indeed the powerful and selfless server. But it is towards the decentralization and decentralization of the Aquarian subject that the Leo must move, without the eyes so focused on the little self, or even on the grand self, or even on the soul self. I'm recalling that Master D.K. said that those who were too involved in the expression of their own soul could not be used in the process of the reappearance of the Christ. They were too involved with their own expression. Sounds very Leonian, and the eye can be not only on the lower self, but on all the soul talents found in the causal body. Well, the fourth initiation is a very decentralizing initiation. It precipitates the man's consciousness into the impersonal triadal sphere where much larger plans, planetary in nature, are afoot. And the Leo subject, or any of us, really begin to see ourselves or himself in proportion to these larger objectives, and that takes him off the center of his own observation. He loomed very large within his own field of consciousness, and that large object, the ego, becomes smaller and smaller, diminishing to a point, and finally, in a way, a relinquished point, which is rather Aquarian in nature. It will alter the self-service of Leo, and remember, Aquarius is also capable of that form of self-service. it will alter the self-service of Leo into the group service of its polar opposite. But of course, the selfish Aquarian also turns the great flood of energies upon itself, himself, so that the many serve the one. Now, what the Leo subject, who is the one, has to realize is that the one must serve the many. So either of the signs can be selfish. It just depends upon the point of view achieved. So anyway, the evolution of Leo is towards Aquarius and towards the group service of Aquarius. It might appropriately be added here that the prayer or voiced aspiration of the true Leo person, one who has achieved higher levels of realization and power, can be expressed in the words of the Christ, so well known to all of us, "Father, not my will, but thine be done." This has a relevance, a relevance for Leo, and also for Pisces. Well, really for all of us who are strongly identified in our individual nature, there comes a time when we must say, "Father, not my will, but thine be done." The self-will of the Leo is pronounced. But eventually, through proportional vision, the little self is seen in all its smallness, and it is realized to be just a tiny aspect of a great process. And when this sense of proportion enters, then the disciple can say, "Father, not my will, but thine be done." Okay. Well, I think this seems to be a good place. What I'd like to do here is call this the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 93, and it's just A, that's all, the 30th of April. And then go on further in this Leo chapter, and would like to end with the great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out. And may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we are working our way through this Leo chapter, a very important chapter for human beings, the sign most closely related to humanity, the most human of all the signs, deeply connected to our individualization process long ago when we became a distinct self-conscious unit. And as we're told, the dawn of real self-consciousness occurred in a Leo phase 3 million years after the first individualization, which also involved Leo, but Sagittarius and Gemini as well. So we will now move on to Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 94.